Merry Christmas, everybody! My name is Joey Lopes, and today I am joined here on Lopes on Movies, the only movie review show for you and for me, by Connor.
Ho, ho, ho! Joey, how you doing?
I don't know. I'm disappointed in my intro, because I wanted to do something Christmas-related, but then I didn't really, like, know where to go with it after saying Merry Christmas, so now it's just kind of awkward, but I don't know. What can you do? You can't win them all. And what does it matter? We're all excited because it's Christmas. Don't you love Christmas?
Joey, is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Ah, man. It's funny how, like, the whole Die Hard is a Christmas movie thing. I remember the initial, like people saying it's the best Christmas movie. It was, like, a really funny and cool thing to say, like, 15 years ago. And then throughout the past 15 years, it's come in cycles of either coming back or being uncool or being cool to say. So at this point, I feel like we're in kind of like, if you say that Die Hard's your favorite Christmas movie, it's kind of like an eye roll. It's like, oh, we get it. You know, we get it. You think Die Hard's the best Christmas movie, you know, because that used to be like a joke, but now it's played out. But it's also not really a joke, but it's kind of a joke. You know what I mean? Am I crazy?
Oh, no,
am I talking crazy?
No, you're not crazy. The only reason I bring it up is that I know it's back in... They put it back in theaters for the holiday season now, so the theaters are trying to get in on it too.
Did they really? Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's playing all over the city. Yep.
Well, the thing that kind of, like, annoys me about the Die Hard as a Christmas movie thing is because, like... You know, it's become such a bit that's been so played out and annoys so many people that it's overshadowing the fact that, like, you know, Die Hard kind of, it rules. Like, that's a great movie.
Oh yeah,
you know,
great.
So I don't want us to get away from that fact because we're annoyed by the Die Hard is a Christmas movie crowd. You know, like don't let those people overshadow the reality that Die Hard is awesome. It's a great movie. You know, let's just like divorce it from the annoying part of its legacy that exists right now and just allow it to be a great action movie like it is.
No.
And if you want to call it a Christmas movie, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah. So here's one. So I was just looking at this Esquire article from like a week ago or so. And they named the 60 best Christmas movies of all time. And there's a lot on here that really I wouldn't think of or Christmas movies, you know?
Like, really?
Yeah, I mean, there's... The first three are pretty... Although I've only seen two of the first three. Like, they have number one, It's a Wonderful Life. That I think that's, you know, pretty makes sense.
You know, I first saw that movie for the first time last year around Christmas.
We should have talked about that today instead. I'm not prepared, though, so we're not going to do that.
I know. It's been far too long. Far too long. But I'm literally saying it's been about a year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, wow. What a great movie, right?
That's a tremendous movie. Yeah, with George Bailey, you know, played by Jimmy Stewart, you know. That is a great movie. To see.
Well, that's one of those classics that's, like, totally earns every bit of its classic status. Where, like, if you haven't seen it, you might not believe that it's as good as it is. But then when you watch it, it absolutely is that good. And a lot more interesting than I think people give it credit for. Because the people will obviously say it's just a great Christmas movie. But it's also a very, like, just an interesting movie. I feel like that main character is very interesting. Like, the Jimmy Stewart character. And there's some aspects of the story that are, like, dark in... Not just because of the subject matter of like the literal story, but just like the way his character behaves, it's sometimes very dark. Like he's got like a mean streak to him that's very bizarre.
Hey, but look, I mean, I like imagine if your whole life was taken from you. Like, you know, we're brothers. Imagine if, you know, I had a whole life that I was supposed to have, but you took it from me and lived my life that I wanted. You know?
Sure. No, it's something, but
that
like,
would do something.
I don't know that if that happened, I would be going home to my wife and like snapping at my kids.
That didn't happen the whole time. We're paid. This is George Bailey is a great American. Let's not tarnish his legacy. But all right, so here's number two.
I'm saying it in a good way.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation was number two. I have not seen that, but I cannot imagine that, that's number two.
Yeah, that doesn't feel right.
No.
But then again, like if I was going to be thinking about like Christmas movies, like I don't know what I would put in the top five. Like, does Christmas Charlie Story, Brown Christmas count as like a movie?
It is. It's on this list somewhere. A Christmas Story okay. is on here. That one makes sense. White Christmas, Bing Crosby musical sure. thing. That makes sure. sense. Home Alone. Home Alone is still very loved.
Sure.
I guess yeah, it takes place during Christmas time. Scrooged. I never saw Scrooged, but I remember wanting to put that on years ago with an ex-girlfriend, and she was not feeling Scrooged, but I was totally into it, but never watched the whole thing. Don't know why.
That's interesting.
Miracle on 34th Street is on here. Bad Santa. I saw that, but I don't know. Where Billy Bob Thornton plays a bad Santa, I guess.
A bad Santa, mall Santa, or whatever it is.
Yeah, Muppet Christmas Carol, just regular Christmas Carol, A Nightmare Before Christmas. Never seen that either, but I bet you I would find some interest in it. Tim Burton, mm-hmm. Danny Elfman, mm-hmm. did the music. Mm-hmm. Here's mm-hmm. one, and then we'll stop this, and then we can just go. Charlie Brown Christmas is 14.
Okay, fair enough.
The movie The Apartment is number 12. Do you remember? Do you think of Christmas with The Apartment? You know, the Fred McMurray, Billy Wilder, Jack London.
There's the Christmas party, right? Like that does happen. That was a Christmas party, right?
It was, in the movie? Yeah.
Okay. That certainly is not something that ever would have registered to me. But if we want to make that claim, whatever. That's a great movie. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Apartment is as much a Christmas movie as Die Hard.
Exactly. And they both take place in like tall buildings in for much of their runtime.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's enough of this list. There's Christmas movies to watch if you want to look at that Esquire article. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sure. But, you know, ultimately we're not here to talk about Christmas movies because there's a handful of movies that have come out in recent days that we've seen and have not talked about on any level. So we're going to try to catch up a little bit with some of those. So I guess we'll start with one that both of us saw, which is, I don't think it's still in theaters, but I'm kind of curious to talk about it a little bit because this was an interesting one in some ways. This was Napoleon, the Ridley Scott Napoleon, starring Joaquin Phoenix as the titular character, and Vanessa Kirby as, I don't remember her name. What was her name? Napoleon's wife?
Josephine.
That's right. See, I'm not a Napoleon expert. Napoleon experts were not happy with this movie because apparently it's not very historically accurate to the real Napoleon.
I got a word for those people. By
the way. I feel like Napoleon has a lot of he's got like guys still today. Like there are Napoleon guys that are out there fighting battles for him. It's like, you know, I don't feel like we need to be defending Napoleon like so much. We don't need to stand Napoleon. It doesn't really.
Yeah, but you know what? I also think that it's kind of like a like fake. Like people like had maybe they were irritated with some aspects of the movie, so that they decided to go on CinemaSins or whatever. Or I don't know if that would be the right place. But all these the amount of like expert Napoleon people who are chiming in about how this movie stinks because it's not based on this, and then the people who followed that with because it's not 100% historically accurate, it's not good. Like, mm-hmm. come on, it's a movie, and I think it's great the way I enjoy the artistic liberties that were taken on some aspects.
That makes Napoleon like worthwhile to me, just like the movie Napoleon, I mean, is that like the way they characterize Napoleon is very funny, and yes. like maybe it's a little insulting to Napoleon, but again, I don't think Napoleon, you know, like he doesn't necessarily need, or I don't think he's going to be upset, let's put it that way, because you know, he's been dead for you know, for quite a long time. So I think it's okay for us to knock Napoleon down a peg, maybe.
You know, I gotta tell you, I don't think it's totally a hit job, you know?
It's not totally a hit job. It's just that he as a character is very strange. And Joaquin Phoenix plays him as a big weirdo. And there's some, like, super odd scenes. And especially, like, his relationships with women and how he conducts himself with, like, he's a little freak. It's very funny.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it. And I think other aspects that the Napoleon stands are upset about is that he was like a really like a brilliant war tactician and strategist, right? And mm-hmm. I can kind of see that being a criticism if you have that, where I think in the film, at least, the best strategy you see from him is that he really knows how to place his cannons well, you know? Like, that's basically yeah. the extent of it, which I'm sure mm-hmm. there's more to it there, obviously. I mean, the guy has won so many battles, like, throughout history, and there's so many different mm-hmm. things. I'm certainly mm-hmm. not a mm-hmm. Napoleon like expert, and I don't claim mm-hmm. to be or really mm-hmm. care mm-hmm. to be, but I found mm-hmm. It very interesting, and I think there's clearly so much here, like, because I mean the Napoleonic Wars, it's kind of incredible how much they was covered. You know, it was a whole Egypt campaign, the Moscow mm-hmm. invasion, Battle of Water. Like, there's so many things. And, like, in there, like, I think this might be better in a longer form kind of content. And this is definitely a long movie. Like, but if this, it felt very cut to me.
It definitely rushes through a lot of the story because there's just so much story to get through. And, like, I mean, what can you do, right? Like, my understanding is that, like, Ridley Scott has some ridiculously longer cut that will get released on Apple TV or something. Maybe that will let some of the scenes breathe a little more, particularly, like, the battle scenes and some of the more historical, like campaigns. Like, that stuff is a lot shorter than, I think, the more interstitial, like, character stuff in the movie, which is fine. Because I think that stuff is where the real, like, meat of the movie is anyway. But it definitely feels like a lot of the big historical moments in the Napoleon story are sort of glossed over. And that's just, you know, it's already a long movie, so there's only so much time to tell this entire story in one movie. But then again, I would not want to watch a miniseries. Like, if this was a miniseries, I just wouldn't watch it. So I'm glad it's a movie.
Or maybe just, like, I think this could have been multiple movies. Potentially, you know, or like with enough content.
That would never happen, though. You're not going to make Napoleon 2.
I want Napoleon 2. Come on.
Come on.
You don't want to see Napoleon 2?
Like, just like, you realize how ridiculous this sounds now, right? Now that I've said Napoleon 2, you understand. This is an absurd idea.
I think I would like it. I think it would be fun. The thing I did enjoy, I think you have to take a lot of this movie with a grain of salt too. Like, you can't be like offended by it as like a Napoleon expert. Like, the fact that this is probably covering how many years of time, and Joaquin Phoenix looks like he's a 45-year-old person the entire time, even mm-hmm. though at the beginning mm-hmm. of the movie he's probably supposed to be like 25, and then mm-hmm. by the end of the movie he's supposed to be like, you know, however old he's supposed to be, you know, mm-hmm. late 40s, 50s, but he looks the same the whole time. Like, I think that's fine.
I appreciate that Ridley Scott doesn't care about any of that crap. Like, he's
I enjoy that. I think it adds to, like, the campy kind of, like, silliness of it, because I think the movie's funny too, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, because that character is so strange and he's such a freak, like, the movie is very funny. Like, it's very deliberately funny. Like, it's... Like, I think there's some people that didn't quite understand that it's deliberate, that it's being funny. But it absolutely is, like, a very funny movie. And there's some lines that are, like, completely ridiculous. but I don't want to, I don't know, I won't spoil anything, but it's good. Like, it's a good time at the movies, I'll put it that way.
The spectacle is incredible too. Like I think I don't know,
yeah, of course.
Really cut touched on like the battle scenes and like,
yeah, they're great
and they're brutal too. Like I've never seen you see like horses and
oh yeah, they're pretty
and
violent,
people getting like hit with cannonballs and things like mm-hmm, that. Like mm-hmm. kind of close up. It's it's pretty cool. And usually I can't recall seeing something quite like this at this kind of scale where you see the actual sure. battles of what they must have looked like. I appreciated that. I thought it was good. I think this is fine. The spectacle's fun. It's not a masterpiece by any means. Just don't go into it thinking that you're seeing, you know, Saving Private Ryan or some like, you know, master work that's, you know, some supposed to be taken as perfect gospel, you know.
Well, here's the thing. It's it, for this year, there's a lot of movies that like you could imagine watching on your television while you're standing up and got your arms folded and you're just like engrossed like that. The things that everybody always jokes about dads do, they like to watch the TV standing up like next to the TV when a good movie comes on. And like in terms of movies like that, this is of that genre for sure, but it's not quite as good as like Oppenheimer, which is like the peak of that kind of genre of movie, right? Or like you could imagine it playing on TNT and just like watching the whole thing, right? So, you know, there's a couple of movies this year. Oppenheimer's at the top, but Napoleon's in there somewhere.
Yeah, you
know, it'll have a legacy there somewhere.
I think this looks good on the big screen though.
Well, yeah, but you can't see it on the big screen anymore.
I think it's still playing here a little bit. No, maybe not.
Yeah, well, in New York, maybe, but you know, that's a whole other world up there.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Well, nah, here the movie's legacy will be television. So if you're gonna watch it on Apple TV or something in the near future, I'm trying to help the people that are gonna have the possibility of watching it that way. You know, Connor.
Okay, yeah, watch the 4-hour cut.
Yeah, why not? You'll have a great time. Joaquin Phoenix is very funny.
If I had Apple TV, I would.
All right. Well, what else can we talk about? I mean, God, there's just so much. Like, I know you've seen a ton of things. I mean, I'll give you a very quick review because I saw Godzilla Minus One, which probably is still playing in theaters right now. So I want to let that one get out there. So this in terms of Godzilla movies, you can kind of like in recent memory, you can divide them into like the American Godzilla movies and the Japanese Godzilla movies. The American ones for like recent times kind of started with that. I think it was in 2014 that this one came out, the Gareth Edwards Godzilla movie that had Aaron Taylor Johnson in it and Bryan Cranston, like that movie. And from there, that's kind of evolved into this franchise that's also going with like the King Kong movies and was it Godzilla King of the Monsters, was that the sequel to it? We talked about that on this show.
We talked about this and
we hated that movie. Like that was like horrible
King
time
of the King of the Monsters movies. Was bad, but I remember enjoying
the 2014 one was fine. Liked it well enough.
It was the first one.
But that is running parallel to the Japanese ones, which they got kind of their quote unquote reboot with Shin Godzilla, which of course was the Hideaki Anno movie, who's most well known for Neon Genesis Evangelion. Everybody loves Evangelion, as they should. And that movie, I think, has had a massive legacy since it's come out as just like one of the best Godzilla movies, certainly, but also just a fantastic movie. In its own right, just because it's so clever and interesting and is such a great take on the Godzilla story and using the character in a way to tell an interesting story about like bureaucracy and garbage and sort of a comment on the Japanese response to crisis. It was very recently that the Fukushima nuclear plant thing had happened. So it was sort of commenting on that and just the bureaucracy involved. And so it was a very, very clever movie, a very funny movie, a very great movie. Just very, very well done, evocative, incredible images in that movie. And now we have this movie, Godzilla Minus One, which is not a sequel. It's not really a prequel. It's just another Godzilla movie that's kind of rebooting Godzilla with a different story. And it's nothing like Shin Godzilla, because Shin Godzilla is a very clever movie that is not so much a like just straight blockbuster Godzilla emotional experience. It's an interesting, clever movie. Whereas this one is very much a blockbuster action adventure type movie, in every sense of the word. But it's still good. Like it's not like it's good in a different way than Shin Godzilla is good. I wouldn't say it's a classic by any stretch, but it's a very, very entertaining blockbuster movie. And it's got an interesting premise on some level, like a vaguely interesting premise and some big emotional moments that I think are welcome, you know? Like the basic premise is that this, it takes place like basically at the tail end, right at the end of World War II. And our main character is a kamikaze pilot who doesn't go through with it. He lands on a island that was, I think it's like Odo Island or something. It was commissioned as a base for repairing kamikaze planes. So he lands there, and the people there are like the captain there is initially a little bit skeptical because it doesn't seem like there's anything wrong with his plane. So this main character, it's just he couldn't go through with it. He couldn't you know, crash his plane and do any damage. So he has all of this guilt over being a coward, right? But then at this island, Godzilla appears and like basically kills everybody at the camp, and he's unable to get in the cockpit and fire his guns at Godzilla because he's too afraid. So we have this character who's grappling with his wartime like inability to go through with his what he was ordered to do, and his ultimate like survivor's guilt and feeling like a coward, as well as his dealing with Godzilla, who continually is just like showing up at the worst possible times to make his life just absolutely awful. So the movie basically follows post-war Japan and his like attempts at rebuilding his life and coming like sort of coming to terms with having survived the war and what he's going to do in the future through his pursuit of Godzilla with a bunch of other characters in the movie. And the mission to stop Godzilla is sort of I guess you could call it like a in an emotional sense, a way for them to like move on from the war, right? Like start a new life, right? And Godzilla is sort of an externalization of that. So it's interesting. Like it's a decent little premise, and I think the it takes it seriously, and the emotions are very, very big and broad. The performances are great. There's some very fun characters. It's like it's a little bit like obvious, like really obvious, and kind of beating you over the head with what it's about, but it works, you know, like it's good. And the action scenes and special effects for Godzilla are fantastic. Like Godzilla is just such a, like, especially in these modern Japanese Godzilla movies, Godzilla is just so awesome, you know, like such a great character. And like the way that they do Godzilla now, like the way that the special effects are done on him and the way that they characterize him and how he walks, how he stands, like he's just such an iconic presence. And of course they got that great Godzilla music.
I was going to ask how the music was. Yeah.
The music is fine for the most part, but it's that Godzilla theme song. Like first, you know, that starts with that big brassy, like, dun, 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 dun. Right, but then goes into that string thing, like, you know, the Godzilla theme, right? But that's like, no matter how many times they use that in a Godzilla movie, I don't care. You know, like, I never get tired of it. Like, even though it's obviously, like, you know, it feels like it's so obvious and they're going to use it at some point. You could think of it as a nostalgia thing. You could think of it however you want. It doesn't matter because it's just so good. It's just such a good piece of music. And every time they use it, it hits. My only criticism of the movie I can't really talk about because it's a spoiler, but fundamentally, I think it's a great time. It's a great time at the movies. It's a solid movie. It's a good movie. And I would recommend it. Not an instant classic in the same way that Shin Godzilla is certainly an instant classic, but It's 100% worth your time. No question about it. So you should go see that one, Connor.
I think you'd have a good time. I'll put that one on the list, and then we'll do a follow-up after I see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Well, we don't have a lot of time here, Connor. So is there anything you want to say about any movies that you've seen? Just like a really quick like recommendation, no recommendation, you know, whatever you want to give it.
Oh, gosh, there's a few that I want to talk about in longer amount of time.
Maybe you could tease some of these a little bit.
Okay, yeah, sure. How about Dream Scenario with Nicolas Cage?
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, where he plays a kind of schlubby, guy who's just a professor who wants more out of his life, but really hasn't done anything to really earn getting any more out of his life. And then suddenly all like hundreds of or millions of people start to dream about him. Like he just appears in their dreams. At first, he's not really doing much in those dreams. And then next thing you know, he's like a terror. He's killing people in their dreams. He's, doing horrible things to them. And then the movie is really about how the world that we currently live in would take a kind of overnight celebrity like he becomes in this and the way they build him up and then break him down and then how the media would react to it. And then that kind of thing. It's kind of, it's funny for a while and it gets kind of sad. It's a pretty interesting and good performance from Nick Cage too, who I think has done so much good stuff like late in his career now. Like it's just, at first he was, it seemed like he was just taking every single role that was given to him. But now it seems like he's really picking and choosing these really interesting and good art house pieces that aren't huge budgets, really good character things that he does where he gets to do his weird, wacky acting. And it's fun. I would recommend this one. It is kind of sad, I thought, though.
Well, nothing wrong with being sad. Sometimes a sad movie is what you need on a cloudy day. But I will have to ask you one question before we end here, Connor. And I'm going to bring it back to the Christmas theme real quick.
Okay.
And you can give me a very, very short answer based on your opinion. I have heard from some people that they believe the new Alexander Payne movie, The Holdovers, could be a future Christmas classic. Do you think that it has that kind of juice? Because I want to see The Holdovers. But yeah, I'm wondering, is that where it's at? Is that kind of what we're talking about here?
I like The Holdovers quite a bit. I think you definitely need to see it. It's in the same kind of vein as like Dead Poets Society, which I know I'm not making any kind of I think everybody will make that kind
everybody
of connection.
Will make that connection. Yeah,
but yeah, it's a good little Christmas story. Heartwarming kind of thing. Good character. Paul Giamatti is fantastic, but everybody is so good in the movie. Also, it's just one of those good solid times. This is such I really gotta say, this is such a good year for movies. Like out of nowhere too.
There's too much stuff to see. I have missed so many things because they've just come and gone. And I just haven't had a lot of time. There's an overabundance of things that I want to see from this year, and that's a great problem to have. I'm thrilled that we're at this point in 2023. It's a wonderful time to be watching movies. So yeah, hopefully I'll get the chance to catch up on some of those. But until that point, everybody have a super Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and we will see you next week.